your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Wednesday night, September 17, 2025, as we record this new episode. Man, I was on the optimism train, hoping, wishing that things were turning around for the White Sox, and suddenly, the April version has returned. A six-game losing streak has almost derailed any dreams of this White Sox team avoiding 100 losses. In this episode, Chris Getz speaks to the media, and we have audio from that press conference. We'll recap what happened against Baltimore as Martin Perez left the game with an injury. Is his career at risk? We'll also preview this upcoming weekend series as the San Diego Padres roll into town and update the MLB postseason races. On Wednesday, September 17th, Chicago White Sox general manager Chris Getz held his season-ending press conference before his team concluded their series against the Baltimore Orioles. Here's Getz's opening statement as his front office team now enters their review phase.
It's an opportunity to kind of do a season review, zooming out and looking at the year as a whole. Oftentimes I get asked how you're going to measure success, knowing that wins and losses might be a difficult measure. And you look across this team, the contributions that we've gotten from so many young players, the Kyle Teals and the Caros and what Colson Montgomery has done, and Chase Mydrouth in his first season in the big leagues, Vargas taking a step forward, Lenin Sosa having the year that he did, Shane Smith becoming an all-star, as a Rule 5 pick, and Mike Vassell being excellent in the bullpen role, as another Rule 5 pick that we were able to acquire. So, to have this young group transition to the big leagues the way that they have, looking back, if you would have told me that they were going to come up here and do what they've done and shown the fight that they have, I would have been pretty happy. With that being said, we acknowledge that there's plenty of work that needs to be done. We know that we're in a review phase right now, looking at different areas of the organization, whether it be departments, coaching staff, players, what have you. But once we, exit kind of the review phase and enter in the off season, we want to continue the momentum that we've created here. We're excited about the future. Just anyone that seemingly has tracked and followed the White Sox, there's been a lot of brighter moments than years past, and people can see and feel the build here. And that was really the goal coming in. And we're going to find ways to improve this. Most importantly, we need to have these young players or players in this organization have an excellent offseason. Absolutely, dominate when it comes to their offseason programming and providing the support that's needed, in that continual development. So, we're organizing that. We're going to carry it out in the offseason because these players, this group is vital, for the future success of this organization. And we've got a little bit more time to the season's end. We want to finish as strongly as we can, continue to have conversations with Will and the staff. And we've got coordinators and directors in town having discussions, and then make some decisions at the end of the season and continue to build the momentum of the offseason and bring us towards 2026.
After a better second half of the season, Getz was asked what parts of the White Sox need to be addressed this offseason. Position player-wise, looking at wins above replacement, there are opportunities at third and first base, and then the outfield, especially if Mike Tauchman doesn't return. Then there's the pitching staff, which endured many injuries that forced new faces to take on the innings workload. That's the first position group Getz addressed.
We've got a young pitching staff. We've got pitchers that have done well, taken steps forward, some that have plateaued a little bit. I think that's an area that you always want to deepen and strengthen. You look at the bullpen. We've had, parts of the year that our bullpen has done really well. There's been some times where it's kind of let us down. You know, you look at some of the one-run losses. Okay, how do we turn those into wins? And, you know, it's deeper than just having a better bullpen, because we know it comes down to scoring runs and preventing runs. But to strengthen that bullpen and deepen the bullpen, knowing that to navigate a 162-game season, it takes more than, you know, a 13-man pitching staff and an 8-man bullpen. I mean, it's continuing to build depth and finding ways to strengthen it. You look at defensive play across the diamond. There are, you know, areas that you feel good about, but also I think we need to tighten, our defense and getting a little bit more detailed. Just to go out there and take away, you know, some hits that we know can prevent some runs. Offensively, the second half has been much brighter than it has in the first half or prior to that. Some of that is just the maturing of some of our young hitters and hitters in this league. And, there's some of these guys haven't played as deep into the year that they have ever in their career. So, you know, that's one thing that needs to be addressed in the sense that, you know, when you're assessing everything, we got to know that some of these guys just haven't, you know, played as many games that they have. The minor league schedule with Monday off days and being able, you know, having a 17 game stretch with no off days, and having the durability to not only show up every day but to perform at a high level. Those are areas that need to be focused on. So, like I said, there's plenty of areas that need to be improved on. We got to understand the strengths of the player. There's going to be opportunities to add to this group. If appropriate, we'll go ahead and try to attack that.
Of course, the biggest question is how much or how little the White Sox will spend this offseason. Shocker. But Getz is not committing to a direction either way at this moment.
Get an understanding of what the free agent market is, obviously what other clubs are trying to accomplish in regards to, working out a trade to help out each club. So time will tell. You need to kind of get a sense of, how quickly the market's going to move. I think more than anything, you look at the free agent market, you look at the pitching and the hitting, and what we feel like could be a fit here. It's a little too early to predict how everything's going to play out, but I think all areas of the team can be improved. But the most important thing is continuing the improvement and development of our young players.
One of the bright spots for the White Sox in 2025 have been the catchers, Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro. Getz admits he's open-minded to trying either players at different positions.
You know, being that the catching position, you know, it may be the most important position on the field. You know, we going back to really being strong up the middle and establishing a middle infield like we have with Colson Montgomery and Mydroth, and I bring up Bregoia and Antonacci that are, you know, in the wings and pushing forward. But going back to the catching group, the tandem that we've rolled with Teal and Caro, you know, it's really comforting to know that we not only have two, but we have three. Young catchers here. How it's going to play out, you know, it's yet to be seen. You know, it's vital to build that catching depth, not only to protect your own organization, but we know how valuable it is in our industry. So, you know, is there an opportunity to repurpose some of these players to help in other areas? Sure, we're open-minded to it. But more than anything, I feel really good about where we are in the catching front. That hasn't been the case in the past. So, you know, we're going to use that to our benefit moving forward.
As for Luis Robert Jr., who missed the end of this season due to a hamstring injury, Getz says it doesn't matter. The White Sox center fielder is coming back in 2026.
It doesn't really change anything. You know, we knew that when he, hurt his hamstring, that we knew that was a possibility, that there might be an injury that hits him or someone else. But Louis is obviously proven that he can be an impactful player, and it doesn't need to just be in the box. So, he's still in a White Sox uniform. We anticipate him being in a White Sox uniform next year, and, you know, it just continue to strengthen our group up the middle.
One of the areas of player development that didn't work out is Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. Schultz is out for the Arizona Fall League action with the knee injury, as he only pitched 73 innings in 2025, splitting time between Charlotte and Birmingham. He had 76 strikeouts, but a very high walk rate with 45. That's 5.5 walks per 9 innings for Schultz. Smith proved to be very difficult to make contact against, as he only allowed 42 hits in his 75 innings with Birmingham. But he walked 56 batters, which is a 6.7 walks per 9 innings rate. Getz talked about their 2025 seasons and what his initial expectation was for both going into 2026.
Truthfully, I was hoping that these guys would be, you know, ready to contribute right out of the gate next year. That might not be the case based on how their seasons played out, but it doesn't change the our assessment and the ceiling of the player. You look at the, you know, you look at the engine that these guys have, and all it really takes is, you know, putting together 5-6 outings, and all of a sudden you look up and they're making a good run. There's plenty of examples of that. So, you know, Hagen's going to be in the Arizona Fall League, continuing his season. Noah, you know, the knee injury has been nagging, and to get that, you know, rested and rehabilitated is going to be important for his power and his command and his continual development. And I think we're going to look up and see those guys helping our Major League club fairly soon.
Then there's Will Venable. In his first year managing, it seems unlikely at this juncture the White Sox will avoid 100 losses. But Getz gives Venable high praise on how he navigated the waters this season.
Yeah, Will's been excellent. And, you know, I talk about his steadiness and his consistency of message and his ability to connect. You know, when you're talking about, you know, a lengthy season and you know, you see coaches and managers and players kind of ride the roller coaster a little bit. And although we might have a tough loss, I know that the following day when I walk into his office, he's ready to go and put together a plan to win that ball game. And that's what made us so attracted to him. You know, and as the season progressed, we just became more and more impressed with his ability to you know, lead this team, lead this clubhouse, and be a leader in this organization. So Will's had, you know, an excellent first season as a manager. You know, sometimes you need to remind yourself that this is still his first year managing, and that's just a testament to, you know, his ability to adjust, to read the room, and continue to be the person that Will Venable is. And that's a guy that shows up clear-minded and creates optimism within our clubhouse.
It's September. We are familiar how Getz states a particular position for the organization and then changes his mind at the GM meetings. Remember when he got hired and he thought it would be a quick turnaround for the White Sox? Then at the GM meetings, he tells everyone he doesn't like his team? Don't think Getz is stepping out of bounds with setting expectations for next season. But he sees a light at the end of the tunnel for White Sox fans.
You don't want to set, you know, too low of expectations for a young group. You know, we have players that are performing better here than they did at times at the minor league level. So I don't want to limit them by any stretch. But I do think it's important to know that, you know, this is still a young, impressionable group that's developing at the major league level. And, you know, is there excitement? Is there optimism? Absolutely. We need to continue to find ways to support these players. We took a jump in regards to, you know, wins this year. But, you know, and I go back to Will and how one of his strengths is just staying in the moment. And we never get, ahead of ourselves. We don't talk about, you know, next week or the following week. It's about the game in front of you. And, you know, you look around the league and I think the Tigers are a prime example of what they accomplished last year. And talking to the Tigers, talking to their front office and coaching staff, you know, I don't think they really thought that they were going to make the run that they did, but you just looked up and, you win this series and that series, and then you won 10 out of 12. And before you know it, you're knocking on a playoff opportunity. That's how this happens. It's, so you just continue to find ways to improve. This club has proven that they believe in themselves, that they can beat anyone. We've won series against first base clubs, teams that are the top of the league. These guys aren't scared. They're fearless out there. And that, type of attack and approach is going to bode well for us. So, yeah, I don't want to limit them. I really don't. And it's my job to continue to support and add to this club when, you know, as the opportunities come our way. And, you know, I know that in the future here we're going to look up and feel pretty good about where we're at. I mean, the fans have been, you know, fantastic. They really have. I go back to our Friday nights at home, our City Connect nights, and, you know, it's been really fun. It really has. And, you know, I've had opportunities to speak to, you know, groups of our fan base and getting their feedback and, you know, things that they like and want to see. And it's been really positive. It has. And I think it's important for our fans to know that, you know, our players, they love having the fans support. They love having them show up. They perform well. And I want our fans to be a part of it. The Chicago fan base is a special one. You know, I talk to former players all the time about how special this place is. You know, recently had a conversation with Paul Konerko and, you know, was getting feedback from him. And, you know, I you know, kind of talking about the similar message of how great this fan base is. And he says, you know, if you've got a team that shows fight and doesn't give up and likes to play together and plays this game hard, the fans will get around you. And we felt that this year, and we appreciate it, and we owe it to the fans to continue to grow this group.
Continuing the conversation from Chris Getz's presser and recap what the hell happened against Baltimore this week is Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. And hello, gentlemen. Jim, as I mentioned the intro, and this is the second time that I've sighed on this podcast already, I was on the train of optimism for this White Sox team, and then all of a sudden, the April version has returned.
The April version crossed the tracks, ignored the gates, and now the train has slowed or has stopped because there's been a tragedy in front, and they have to wait to clear the tracks. Yeah, it's almost like when taken in the context of Chris Getz giving his end of year address and not doing anything to cause any premature excitement, that he almost like he turned the sliders up on the difficulty just to be like, you know, this team's not that good. They're playing right now in easy mode. Let's turn it up to veteran or all-star and see how well they look now. And then, you know, turns out they're getting swept by Baltimore and needing a bunch of Orioles calamities to even make a game out of any of one of the three. So yeah, it struck me as just like, man, this is poorly timed for the faction that wants like a team that puts pressure on Getz to add right now and be ready to capitalize on linear progression. So as much as we hear that it's not, sometimes it is. And sometimes you want to be prepared for that. So the way they're kind of fading to the finish, you know, I don't know if it's fatigue. I don't know if it's books being better on these hitters and being able to better combat the changes they made at the All-Star break. But it is very unexciting baseball. The blessing is that most people are not paying attention to baseball anyway this time of year. They're not going to games. It's school year. It's football season. It's the last nice warm days of the summer, longer days be outside. So this is the time to stink, as opposed to April when you're trying to generate some excitement because people want to be excited about baseball and it's not. So hopefully they're getting it out of the way for next year. Like, the idea is that maybe these adjustments they can carry into the off season and plan accordingly versus being ambushed with it come the first weeks of the season and then looking like they're back to square one.
Yeah, well, Chicago football is not very fun to talk about these days either. So.
When is it?
That's true. That is true. James, you did caution me, though, to not get too excited. And it seems from Chris Getz's comments from the press conference today that he, too, is trying to pump the brakes, as Jim mentioned, about setting expectations for next year. There wasn't a lot of substance in Getz's press conference today. Are you expecting that Getz's comments will carry more substance the next time you get a chance to chat with him at the GM meetings in Las Vegas in November?
I mean, even potentially like, you know, he could talk about, he could or could not, depending on how significant it is, I guess, or if they make, like, if their coaching staff changes, maybe we could talk to him before that. generally contracts end at the end of October. So they kind of have to acknowledge some changes if there are. So that could be one angle. But yeah, like, GM meetings, theoretically you've already made decisions on, I think I'd have to look at the tender deadline, but you should have an idea of what you're doing by then, at the very least, in terms of like how arbitration is going to affect you. And you probably have a more defined idea. You have room for initial trade calls, at least in terms of like understanding what the parameters their other teams are and what's likely to be available or possible a little bit. So you have more of an idea of what you're going to need to do through free agency. I think you won't necessarily have names attached to things, but maybe more like, we're going to need to sign one or two starting pitchers or something like that. Or a lit more like by November, it's a bit more like, well, we owe it to ourselves to listen about our catchers. Obviously they both distinguish themselves in the league, and that's a compliment to them and the situation they're in, something like that. Rather as opposed to like the way it was like very like obliquely referenced with we might need to repurpose those resources in some way. And so there's a follow-up question, like, you mean like learning new positions? It's like, no. It's like, okay, you're just talking about trades then. So yeah, I definitely think the languages would be a bit more decisive in November. And as much as like, as for him to start by saying it's a season review, and then so much like it was kind of hard to like give a firm conclusion on, like, there is a lot of talking with the GM and very little baseball over the winter. There is a lot more time to talk definitively about this. And maybe we're a little bit, this is seeing him get used to the job, where I think maybe my initial, months covering Chris, it's like, oh, this is kind of cool. In terms of like, you have a former player who doesn't view like the GM meetings as the most intense sports moment of his life, and is a bit more like easygoing about these decisions. Where now I think you're seeing someone who's maybe used to the job, and it's like, there's really no reason to paint myself into a corner on September 17th, and so I'm not going to, type of response to all these questions.
Yeah, so let's give it a couple months, and then we can really set some expectations for the White Sox in the offseason. By then, the offseason plan projects will already be underway, right, Jim?
Yeah, you can borrow ideas from them, as he probably does, and as Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams did before him. I was hoping he would say that they were planning on upcycling the catchers. Like, I'm trying to think of other ways he could phrase that, in terms of trading without trading, bartering. Maybe you can say that we're going to use him to in the barter economy.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens.
I should mention, like, Corey Lee's out of options. So, like, even a traditional Edgar and Kyle forever, this will be the, a dual pairing for 15 years, involves probably prudent, like, resource management would be trading one of those three at some point. Like, trading one of the rookies obviously has a bigger return, and like maybe you get a regular in a new position type of potential, but they kind of have to do something with their current catcher allotment in any form, just from like pure roster pressure. It's worth saying. And that could mean the more mild version of just trading Corey Lee for a small return, because like, you can't keep him as your third catcher next year with the way his system. You could on the roster, but they don't seem like plug on like, yeah, we're totally going to do that for a full season.
Got it. So no plans on having three catchers in the 26-man roster.
I mean, I asked about it last year, like our last press conference, and Chris is like, yeah, some parts of the year will work, some parts of the year probably won't, like, which is kind of how they approach it this year. But I don't know if they're going to, and maybe they could start out next season with it, but they seem skeptical on being able to run that out for like a full 6 month season. And, ideally you wouldn't, like, if somebody sprains an ankle, misses 2 weeks, hey, Corey's already here sort of situation. But they seemed a little skeptical on like being able to ride out with three catchers. Certainly when their position player crop is good, it'd be hard to imagine them being able to do that, as smoothly as they've been able to do it of recent.
Well, I mean, he, out of the press conference, as we heard at the beginning part of the podcast, listeners, he's certain that Luis Robert Jr. is coming back. So we will have clarity on that situation when we do send James out to Las Vegas to cover the GM meetings for Sox Machine, and hopefully gets his comments have more substance. But as I mentioned, there's been times that Getz has said one thing in September. They have their meetings. They chat throughout the month of October. You get to the GM meetings. Oh, wait, we have changed our mind. and they go in a different direction. So I understand him not wanting to be certain in any direction right now and just speaking more generally. Back to the action on the field. And in Wednesday's loss, Martin Perez was pulled from the game early. He left the game due to shoulder soreness. He only lasted 3 2/3 innings, allowed 5 hits, 3 earned runs with 2 walks and 2 strikeouts. James, what did Martin have to say after the game?
He said he started feeling sore in the second inning, and he, you know, obviously kept going. Like, his, like, he immediately says it like, I started feeling soreness and I thought, like, why risk it? And it's like, oh, did you like feel it and then immediately pull yourself? Like, you know, the baseball player version of that is, I started feeling soreness and only pitched another 2 innings because I was being cautious, because that's how they're wired. But yeah, he's getting an MRI Thursday. But at the same time, Will Venable said their initial exam, which obviously did not include an MRI, suggested like he didn't have a major injury and it was his shoulder and not, you know, one hand shoulders, worse news to hear a shoulder than elbow. But for him, being that he basically was on the precipice of TJ, which at his career point, there was seemingly, and also having already had one, you know, over a decade ago, seemed like there was skepticism from his doctor, Keith Meister, about whether he would return to pitch from it. And so for him to rehab that and come back, your initial fear is like, oh, did he blow it out? Now it's done with. For it to be shoulder soreness, like, obviously it's not good, but it's not the, you know, oh, they're shoe dropping, we're kind of fearing with him. And, you know, Martin even said, like, I think I can pitch another 3-4 years if I'm able to rehab it. And that was obviously him kind of talking in terms of, my season's probably over, but here's where I'm looking out from that point. Because, like, even if, like, hey, your shoulder's sore, you're going to skip a start, that's the end of a season at this point of the year. So he's been kind of campaigning for, like, I want to come back, and, you know, where he's at and what his status is in the market. I kind of feel that's him saying, like, I would like to pitch in the majors next year, because I think he's at a point where that's a question every season. But he feels like he was effective, and he obviously is hopeful that he can be healthy. So I think he's trying to say, like, this is a minor thing, we nipped in the bud. Please, White Sox or anyone else who has access to this video, Martin Perez wants to pitch Major League Baseball next season, and look, I've been generally effective. But it seems like it's not as bad as the, you know, what you could imagine when you see somebody who, you know, generally is known for taking the ball, kind of take himself out of the game as decisively as he did at that moment.
James, how does this affect the mutual option?
It's a good question, James.
Would you believe that you are not the first person? Oh, well, you're the first person to do it tongue in cheek, but you're not the first person to ask me a mutual option and trigger a annoyed response about how it's an accounting move to put part of the salary to the next year's balance sheet. And you do some version of putting the hands up and backing away response. Yeah, great to see Vinny Duber in the press box this weekend and deliver that to him. Yeah, I think it weighs a lot on the mutual option, Jim. That's a great point.
Thank you.
Well, it sounds like Martin Perez's career is not done. That was my concern when he got pulled and the shoulder soreness. And I was just curious what he had to say after the game.
But I mean, he doesn't want his major league career to be done. I think no matter what, like, I think he can probably go pitch for Ozzy during the winter if he wants at any point in time over the next 15 to 20 years. But he's pushing to, you know, be back in the big leagues. And I think he would take a guaranteed deal if he was on the table. Just his general vibe seems to be open to network would be, you know, he'd have that on his LinkedIn profile right now.
Got it. It will be, again, another question in November for Chris Getz when they don't pick up his mutual option.
What?
But do they swing around and give him a guaranteed deal for, I don't know, $2.5-3 million to see if he can eat up innings? Be interesting.
I think if you're and the way like Getz even talked about adding starters is like protecting our young starters, which is very much of saying, making sure we don't have to overuse them. We want someone who takes the ball. I think Martin's more on that, you know, level of he's been effective the last time he's pitching, but there's a health red flag there on how many innings he's going to give you. List both for the Sox because they just went through this experience, and just when what general has gone through this year. Like, I think it's more, I think he's more in that window of like, hey, we should add someone who could provide us extra innings, but maybe not leveraging them on. They have to provide us 150, or kind of the house of cards falls on us, because obviously he was not able to do that this year.
Well, neither was Bryce Wilson. I thought, I mean, like revisiting that, that was kind of the idea, like try to sign these guys for cheap. Did Adrian Hauser throw more innings than Martin Perez?
I would imagine, yes.
Yeah.
So I think Perez is around 60.
They found that solution during the season. Maybe they can strike that type of luck again. Or maybe they'll just bring back Adrian Hauser. He'll be a free agent coming into this off season. But no, good stuff, James, on Martin Perez, and glad that it's not career threatening for him. And hopefully he rehabs and gives it another go in 2026. As we enter the last nine games of the regular season, a quick look at the White Sox leaders in key stats. Home runs, we got a tie right now, and who's going to be the home run leader for the White Sox in 2025? Lenin Sosa and Andrew Benintendi are tied with 20. Colson Montgomery is in third right now with 18. The way he's swinging, he's trying desperately to get to 20. Not making a lot of contact, but he's trying to hit 20 home runs this season. On the RBI front, Lenin Sosa's got 70. That might surprise you. Andrew Benintendi's got 62, and Luis Robert and Miguel Vargas are in third, tied with 53. And here is a key one that I'm paying attention to. Now, we don't give a lot of credence to pitcher wins these days in the Sox Machine podcast, but something that caught my attention. Davis Martin and Shane Smith are tied with 6 wins. Adrian Hauser also had 6 wins for the Chicago White Sox. And looking back in the years, last year, Eric Fetty led the White Sox with 7 wins before getting traded to St. Louis. The year before, in 2023, Mike Clevinger led the White Sox with 9 wins. The last time a White Sox pitcher had more than double-digit wins was Dylan Cease back in 2022 with 14 wins. Jim Margulis, I pose a question to you. Is anyone on the White Sox going to get to 7 wins on the pitching staff?
I'm going to say yes, but then I look at the Baseball Reference wins above replacement leaders, and Hauser is still in the lead there, and everybody who's like making a climb at him is like stalling out. Colson being a chief among them, Teal is slowing down a little bit, although, you know, Teal doesn't get the framing credit on Baseball Reference, their accounting of WAR. So it's a case where, you know, maybe not the fairest thing for a catcher, but yeah, Hauser is still in the lead. Mike Vassell's behind him. And then, you know, Montgomery might not get there with the way he's playing. So if you have like Hauser being this kind of force field, that nobody can be better than him, like he was so important to the direction and construction of the 2025 White Sox that nobody is allowed to surpass him or outshine him, then maybe, you know, they stall out 6. But I do think that, I'm going to say Smith will get there.
Okay.
Just because, like, you can set aside his dud from last time out and say, like, okay, that was a one-off. Otherwise, he's been pitching pretty well. So let's say Smith gets to 7 before the end of the year.
All right. Well, when we did our season predictions, James and I, when we did our predictions for the bullpen, I said that the team leader will be 6 saves. Congrats to Jordan Leisure. I totally missed this. He did pass 6 saves. He leads the team with 7.
So he's good.
I don't know if anyone's going to get to double-digit saves for the White Sox, but yeah.
Did you have
6.
Penn Murphy? Was that going to be
a
save?
I had the Murph dog. That did not last long. Did not last long. Remember that name, because the Sporacle end-of-year quiz, Name All the White Sox, is going to be coming up. So make sure you remember Penn Murphy and you don't miss that one out. But it's the list. It's over 60 players right now. It's got to be over 60 for the White Sox.
I think it's 61, because last year was like a record 63. And then they're probably not going to get there unless I don't know what who the I don't know if anyone in Charlotte has not played for the White Sox this season. Dalton Roach, maybe. I don't know. They'd have to get creative to break the record in this one.
Yeah, Tristan Gray does not count, right? Towards that count?
Shouldn't.
I don't know. It was kind of a joke question based on talking to McKinven earlier, but I asked Will, like, how polished is his, like, kind of intro meeting with new players about, like, what the core principles are. And he's like, yeah, it's pretty streamlined. Not working on, I wrote a lot of things down, but I don't need any notes anymore.
Speaking of which, Jake Polish, another guy to remember on the Sportle end of season.
Gosh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, I would have got that one wrong. I would have got that one wrong.
Yeah, Ben Cowles, maybe he's on the 40-man roster. He could be a candidate who hasn't been on the White Sox, but otherwise, yeah, I think everybody. And Iriarte on the 40-man. Like,
I think his ERA just went up over 7 for the year.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not good, but just those are the two candidates I can see where if they don't want to make any unnecessary moves, but somebody is needed, those would be your hopes for tying 63.
Wow. Can't wait. I'm going to do a video so everyone can make fun of me. But I would love anonymously, like Will Venable, not Will Venable, forget Venable, Chris Getz. Getz, you take the Sporkle end of the season quiz and you list every White Sox player that played in 2025 and see how many he gets right. See if he forgets anyone that he called up to join the team.
I mean, if we like, could actually get them to not be embarrassed about it, it would be fascinating to see, like, does Rob Warren, the clubhouse manager, just like annihilate everybody? Like who actually is like becomes great at this, like, would be interesting.
Let's lay it down. We won't make I'm not gonna make fun of anyone. I'm hoping to get 70% and we talk about this team every day.
No, I think the fascinating thing, and I want to do this, is a video of us three doing it together.
Okay.
To see if we can get all the names.
We're going to fail. It's going to be so embarrassing. Oh, can't wait for that. One thing that did happen over the Baltimore series and pretty exciting stuff on Tuesday night, our friends from the 108 had their bobblehead, and I have it right here, right on the video.
You it's pretty good.
You got My Sock Summer. So My Sock Summer, they nailed. You got Beef Loaf. You got his hair. They got the hair right. Chirizi. Love you, bud, but this picture is like from 10 years ago.
That's just for men.
Looking good, all three of them. And, of course, they're all about, they got beers in their hand. And I was thinking, if Sox Machine had a bobblehead, what beverages would be in our hands? James would be sparkling water.
Yeah, yes. Glad you said it before I outed myself.
Jim would be, what, iced coffee?
Yeah, if Ballpark ever provided it. I'm still on just that crusade.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, actually. And I would just be a Dr. Pepper. We're very tame compared to our friends from the 108. But yeah.
Also, I would be keeping head. Score. So I would have the scorebook in the other hand. Real lame, but
now
not ashamed. Lame, but not ashamed.
One idea that I have, because the White Sox are always looking for marketing ideas. And I did enjoy this one. His name's Sidney. He's a great White Sox fan. See him often in Section 108. He suggested that next year, because Chuck Garfine and Ozzie Guillen visited Section 108 to be part of the broadcast, and cause they couldn't do the pre or post game from this section itself. It's a little hard to do live TV from the seats. But they were able to incorporate them into the broadcast. But the idea is to do a live broadcast in Lot B during a tailgate, which would be really cool. My idea, since I know my friends very well, these guys are suckers when it comes to the 50-50 raffle. They cannot say no. If you are a 50-50 raffle volunteer and you walk by Beef Loaf, that man can't help himself. So the White Sox, I have an idea. Because they have it in certain denominations. Have a $108 option next year. $108 gets you 750 raffle tickets. I promise you, every time one of those raffle people go through Section 108, You're gonna get at least one to buy $108 worth of raffle tickets because they only need to win once during the season to make up their money. That's how they'll explain it. So that's my free marketing idea to the White Sox marketing team to keep the hashtag 108 and going into 2026. But congrats, guys. It's a great bobblehead. And then for the White Sox to continue into their final home series of the 2025 season as the San Diego Padres come into town, and the Padres are wrapping up their series against the New York Mets, in which they did win on Wednesday, 7-4. So they improved to 83-69 on the season. They are 6-4 in their last 10. Away from Petco Park, they are 36-41 this season. Your pitching problems for this series between the Padres and the White Sox: Friday night, September 19th, 6:40 p.m. Central Time, Jose Abreu is returning to the South Side. He'll be throwing out the first pitch. It's Dylan Cease, old friend Dylan Cease, returning to face the White Sox against the Dart Davis Martin. Saturday night, 6:10 p.m. Central Time, it's Yu Darvish against Yoenis Gomez. And on Sunday at 1:10 p.m. Central Time, it's to be determined for the San Diego Padres. Sean Burke is the probable starter for the White Sox. We'll see if they decide to do another opener again for Sean Burke, but the Padres are not as lefty heavy as other teams. So maybe it'd just be Sean Burke starting that
Gavin
game.
Sheets, the Gavin Sheets menace.
Oh, that'd be kind of interesting. Multiple old friends in this series against the White Sox. But Jim, the Padres are really good. The White Sox longest losing streak this season is 8 games. They're already at a 6-game losing streak. Will they break their losing streak this weekend, or will they have the longest losing streak of the season?
I will say they break it. Interested in the Dylan Cease start just because he's been really frustrating for Padres fans, baseball fans. Like, I haven't seen like one live reaction to him in any form enjoying the way he's pitching this year. You hear a lot about, you know, a lot of the unfavorable comparisons to Blake Snell in terms of just how unwatchable he is, or just how many pitches he throws and how tedious it all is, striking out a lot of guys, but very much in his initial form with the White Sox of just a lot of strikeouts, a lot of walks, few too many homers for the innings he's pitching. And so, like, there is a, you know, overpowering pitcher in there, but oftentimes you don't see it, or it's just too watered down by all the extra pitches he throws and he only goes 5 or 6. So if he holds that form, I could see the White Sox getting to him and getting to him enough to where, like, you know, just adds the frustration of a season. He's going to have a really fascinating free agency, by the way, just in terms of how to value him, how Scott Boras will market him. You know, maybe he just goes for like the pillow contract, kind of like Lucas Giolito signed, of just some kind of convoluted, you know, vesting options or what have you, or, you know, triggers, out clauses, etc. But that's maybe the one way I could see it going. I think Yu Darvish, on the other hand, the array of pitches he throws and how few fastballs he has to throw, that I could just see that one going very poorly.
Well, with Jose Abreu coming back this weekend, James, is there any hint of what is possibly going on with Abreu? Because last weekend, Anthony Rizzo officially retired from Major League Baseball, and the Cubs immediately honored him, signed him to a 1-day contract, and he's retired with the Chicago Cubs. Any possibility that might be going down this weekend with Jose Abreu and the White Sox?
The only indicator I got was more just like downplaying of like, oh, he's just here to, you know, return to the park and, you know, do some publicity and, you know, throw out a first pitch and hang out. So if they're doing that, they're playing close to the vest, not suggesting, hey, everyone go over here because there's going to be a big media story. They're being pretty low key about it. Ryan Storvone teams have made this kind of a multi-year affair rather than a, you know, one and done. So maybe he could announce that he's doing it next year, and then they're retiring the number the year after that, and a statue after that, and that would be, you know, the build up from the Rose rollout, but no, I haven't heard necessarily any kind of big hints that something that grand is in the offing.
Okay.
It's kind of the first we're hearing from Abreu since he left town. I don't know if he wants is ready to say that he's retiring or anything like that. We'll see what he says. We'll see what euphemisms he uses to indicate recognition, but not quite Christmas on all of our names. Excited to see
Yeah, he always wanted to sing the national anthem.
Yes, this is something that gets brought up in the press box of like, hey, how come he never did that? A lot, but yeah, I haven't seen him answer like a full interview question in English. So the national anthem would be a step up, even he's conversational, he can make small talk, but maybe this is the time to finally do it. That would be something.
I'd be curious if he'd be doing this if the front office hadn't changed, because I know he went out on a sour note that was hard to determine exactly how sour, because a lot of people have different interpretations of the answer he gave in Spanish in terms of whether he got an offer, whether he didn't get an offer, whether he got an offer, but it was insulting. And it did very much sound like he was both, or I guess he was just disenchanted with the entire White Sox experience, both of their efforts to retain him, but also the amount of either babysitting he had to do or toleration for people who didn't have his work ethic. And when he went to the Astros, he was very much sounding like, oh, here's a roster of players who want to win. That wasn't the case or with everybody on the White Sox, and it was very interesting. So I'd be fascinated. I don't want to have him glad you don't have to try to map out just how long he would be staying away, because that would mean nothing had changed. But perhaps Getz and Barfield and a whole bunch of new front office people being there makes it easier for him to come back if there were sore feelings at the very end.
3 minutes alone with Chase Mydrop, and he'll be ready to lace the spikes up again. He'll be like, here are some proper killers here now. Let's do it.
Well, the White Sox could use some help at first base next year. Just saying.
I worked that question in for you against Getz.
You did. Thank you. I appreciate
It
that. I want you to revisit that question in November.
was interesting. It was hard to sum up into the larger narrative of the story.
Yes, but no, I appreciate that. And again, we'll recap what happens between the White Sox and Padres on Sunday night for our next episode of the Sox Machine podcast. We'll see what time. Maybe it'll be Monday. I'll be at Riot Fest. If anyone's going to Riot Fest this weekend, you could find me. We can go see the Beach Boys together, see John Stamos. Again, if you didn't get a chance to check it out, I did interview the founder of Riot Fest, Riot Mike on SoxMachine.com. I will plug that Q&A interview once again as we lean up to this very festive weekend in the city of Chicago. But speaking of festive, we'll end the podcast taking a look around Major League Baseball at the postseason races. The Seattle Mariners won 10 straight games, but they lost Wednesday night a close one to Kansas City. So now they drop half a game behind the Houston Astros. And when you know it, Seattle is visiting Houston this weekend. So it'll have a lot of attention between the Mariners and Astros as they continue to battle in the American League West. The New York Mets now, their lead is just a game and a half over Arizona. The Diamondbacks are now the closest team to the Mets, and the Cleveland Guardians are not dead. They're 4.5 games back at Detroit now, 2.5 games back of Boston for the final wild card spot. So they're still living, but now they're making Detroit sweat. And Jim, Justin Verlander has been great in the second half, and he tells Bob Nightingale he ain't retiring. He's coming back next year, just to spite me. The little known that Justin Verlander doesn't understand that he's older than I am. So at least I got that going for me going to the next season, that I'm not older than every player in Major League Baseball yet.
Seems like he's due to be on the Roger Clemens plan of just hanging around for 3 months and then signing with a team that wants him, or Rich Hill, I guess, also the same kind of program. Just wait to sign
Robertson.
in. Yep. Yeah, that could be the life for him. Although if he's still interested in like racking up as many wins as possible, given that like who knows how many pitchers will even accrue 265 wins in a career. You know, it's one way to set himself apart from peers if 300 is out of the question from here on out. So yeah, it's yeah, that Giants team is fascinating in terms of just yeah, the fact that a 42-year-old Justin Verlander at the end of the season is one of the reasons they actually have a chance of hanging in the postseason, even though they didn't want to be in it, or even at the deadline, they just didn't really give themselves a chance to. Yeah, a whole lot of mediocrity being rewarded in that final spot in the National League of just not trying but having an opportunity anyway.
He's at 265 wins. Okay. He needs what? 35 more wins to get to 300? He's got 3 more years left in him. Totally doable.
Yeah,
He's got
he's
3 wins
one.
this year.
That's nice, but he needs four.
he's got 9 wins total the last 2 years.
Right. You
So the
know,
pace is slowing.
make it five.
the White Sox need starting pitching help next year. He did throw 141 innings. He could join the long list of random players that played for the Chicago White Sox. Let's do it.
Would you like that? Like, James, in terms of Verlander's, he's at least he talks a lot. I'm not sure how much, yeah, I think he covers the spectrum in terms of like being real honest and insightful versus kind of being old and cranky and not necessarily being able to buy into what he says.
Yeah, it'd be kind of, we'll see. It really, really depend on like, does he feel like getting into the weeds about his pitching like in year 25 of his major league career? I could see a world where I love it and like feel conflicted with my teenage self that I'm like having a blast talking pitching with Justin Verlander. I could see a world where he's kind of like doing his own routine and you don't see him very often and mostly just talk to him every 5 days and kind of pick up what his vibe is from teammates more than seeing him a lot. It's hard to tell. Like if I hadn't been like covering Benintendi for 3 years and like he's pretty good about honoring requests, I feel like I'd have a lot of trouble finding him right now. He's very scarce in the locker room. Like when you see him, he's like on a schedule. He grabs something from the locker and he's out. Like he's kind of like, and you know, the coaching staff plays him. He's very self-managed. He's very consistent, but he's just like, some of those veteran players, you see them in the clubhouse often. Some of them you see, it feels like they're like a train on a track, like at all times. And you just see them kind of moving through and it's hard to like really get a lot of interface with them. So it kind of depends where he's at and what he'd be like. It kind of varies.
Well, we'll see if the White Sox kick the tires on Justin Verlander or if Verlander returns to San Francisco this upcoming offseason. But he's coming back for age 43. And even though I think that's a bit crazy and he's got nothing to prove, he's going to the Hall of Fame. At least there's someone older than I am still playing Major League Baseball. And
When was
that
the
makes
last
me
like
feel
43-year-old to
honored.
play for the White Sox, like Fisk and Charlie Huff,
I don't know.
Fiscal? I guess Fiscal would be the last one, right?
Fiscal comes to mind, yeah.
Was he that
Watching
old when he was with the White Sox?
there was some game where they had him playing short and he was like 40, and I was like, how is this happening?
He was 44 his last season with the White Sox.
Wow, I had no idea. Why did they do that? Oh, Kenny
So
Williams.
there's a thing called organizational depth.
And they had none of it. This White Sox organization. That will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also listen and watch the show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on social media. We're on all the platforms at Sox Machine. James will be at the ballpark this week. If you could follow him at JR Fegan, you could follow me at Sox Machine underscore Josh. Sunday is White Sox Fan Appreciation Day, and they're having a podcast row in the Craft Cave. You can visit me. We'll be there The Sox Machine podcast will have a booth in the Craft Cave. So stop by, say hi. I may invite you to record a segment on our upcoming podcast. So again, visit me on Sunday if you're going to the game in the Craft Cave. And we are also on Instagram. Please follow us there. We're trying to grow our following. We're at Sox Machine. And we're also on Blue Sky at SoxMachine.com. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our covers, the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, sign up to become a Sox Machine subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5. That gets you the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website. We also have a couple spots open in our Veterans Committee. That gets you direct access to both Jim and James in our group chat. And we also confide to the Veterans Committee as far as our plans for next year. And we're starting to work on that with our off-season plans and look ahead to our 2026 events. So if you want to be more involved in Sox Machine, there's some opportunities to do that. Go to SoxMachine.com and inquire within. The Sox Machine podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.